This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver
Commercial
Real Estate Podcast.
Welcome back to the Vancouver Commercial Real Estate Podcast. I'm Corey Wright.
And I'm Melissa Moretti.
And Melissa, for those listeners who follow the program on a regular basis, they're going to notice.
What's up?
There was no episode last week.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. But don't worry. Don't worry. So last week, we had a recording and Rod McKay from our Vancouver office stepped in for me because I couldn't be here. You were here with him. And we had the one and only Doug Porter, head economist, BMO on the program to really dig deep into it. And we had some type of technical glitch. The program did record, but then we couldn't retrieve the file properly.
It's out there somewhere.
It's out there. So what we want to say is we're not giving up hope. We are still trying to retrieve that file. We've got several people working on that. And hopefully that will come to fruition and we can release the episode. Doug's obviously ridiculously busy and we appreciate him taking the time to join us last week. But in the rare event that the people we've hired to retrieve this file cannot do it, we're going to bring back Rod and yourself and we're going to recap the episode because Doug obviously is so busy we can't get him back on immediately to help us with that. But we can recap the episode on topics that you guys had covered, maybe some points that Doug had made, because obviously he's one of the smartest men in the business. The economy and politics are top of everyone's list right now. So we are going to find some way, somehow, to get that information out from that great episode that you guys had.
It'll come out eventually.
It did. But on this week's program, we had Chris Kasinchuk, Vice President of Sustainability and Managing Broker over at Warrington PCI Management, to join us to talk about the sustainability and how that applies to commercial real estate. I think a lot of people obviously are very much more aware of you know, the environment now and things that we can do to kind of hopefully better the environment for the future. And sustainability in commercial real estate, especially on the office sector, is a lot bigger than some people think.
And particularly in Vancouver.
Particularly apparently. In Vancouver and Victoria as well. So, yeah. So we had one, it's a topic we've wanted to cover for quite some time. So we had a chance to get Chris in there to talk all about it, how it applies to commercial real estate, all of that stuff moving forward. So we were thrilled about this episode. So without further ado, let's get to our interview today with Chris Kasinchuk from PCI Warrington Management.
Let's go.
Take care. This podcast is presented by Impact Commercial.
Impact Commercial. John, Alan, the team over there are fantastic. They've all been on the show.
They have, yeah.
Friends of the show.
Great guys.
Wealth of experience. They can help with all your commercial financing needs.
Whether it's owner-occupiers, land development funds, commercial investments, or multifamily, these guys got you covered.
And they recently obtained their CMHC correspondent lender status.
So for all your commercial lending needs, visit them at impactcommercial.ca.
That's impactcommercial.ca.
This podcast is sponsored by Atlin at Clayton Crest, a master plan community in the West Clayton area built by Zentera Developments.
Zentera is an absolute force, Adam. They've been nominated for Multifamily Builder of the Year for 10 consecutive years and just won again at the Georgies for 2025 Multifamily Home Builder of the Year.
What's really exciting about Atlin is the West Clayton location. You're within walking distance to the future SkyTrain station, giving you that perfect balance of city access while living in a peaceful, family-friendly community in the Fraser Valley.
And if you have kids or are planning to start a family, there's an on-site daycare where residents get first access. This kind of thoughtful planning is why Zentera's projects stand out in the market.
The amenities at Atlin are incredible too, Matt. A rooftop patio with stunning views, fitness center, co-working space, and lounge areas for events. The outdoor space is extensive with two fitness areas, three children's play areas, and multiple spots to relax.
With major investments happening in the SkyTrain and the 72nd Avenue extension, West Clayton is set for explosive growth. This is genuinely one of those opportunities to invest in a community before values skyrocket.
And that's really the key here. This isn't just about finding a beautiful place to live. It's about making a smart investment in your future as the whole area continues to develop.
Pre-sales for Atlin will begin soon. Register today at atlincondos.ca. That's atlincondos.ca.
All right, we're here today, guys, with Chris Kasienchuk, Vice President, Sustainability and Managing Broker over at Warrington PCI. Chris, how are you doing today?
I'm great. How are you, Corey?
Great. Thanks so much for taking the time to join us here. And before we kind of get into this is one topic that we've wanted to cover for quite some time, talking about sustainability and how that applies to commercial real estate. Because I really don't think a lot of people who maybe aren't in the business of what we do may not understand the impacts that this is going to have. But before we get to that, Chris, can you tell us more about how did you get into your role with PCI and as the managing broker and maybe your previous career in commercial real estate?
Sure. Well, I've been in real estate generally for about 20 years. Started out as a realtor in the Okanagan and then moved to Vancouver, started as a strata manager, and became the strata manager here at Warrington yep. PCI Management. Eventually became the director of the strata division, and this is my 17th year now with the company. And wow. I guess in around 7 years ago, I first heard statistic that 60% of the greenhouse gas emissions in the city of Vancouver come from the built environment. And it was at that point that I realized what enormous responsibility we as property managers have, and also enormous control make a tangible effect on reducing greenhouse gas emissions. So that's kind of the short story about how I got here.
And then for our listeners who maybe don't know who Warrington PCI is, can you tell us a little bit about the company you're with?
Sure. Yeah. Warrington PCI Management is the largest commercial property management company in British Columbia. We manage about 18 million square feet, $12.5 billion in assets under management across all asset classes. Office is roughly 10 million square feet, and then the rest is split equally between residential, industrial, and retail.
We could almost do a whole second show of the office industry and the office sector right now if you guys got that much under management, obviously, with everything's happening sort of post-COVID. We'll have you back for the second one and we'll dive into the future of office. Okay. But why we wanted you on today, Chris, as I talked about the talk of the show here, sustainability, and it's a huge part of what's happening in commercial real estate. Tenants tend to care a lot more about it maybe than once they did before. As you alluded to there, property managers, building owners are also getting very, very involved with it. Cities are coming out with more and more mandates on stuff to try to make things better for the environment. Can you maybe just start us off with what's a very high level? How does sustainability apply to commercial real estate?
Well, I think I sort of touched on it in the percentage of greenhouse gas emissions. In Vancouver, as I said, 60% of the greenhouse gas emissions in the city come from the built environment. Nationally, that number is around 18, just south of 20% of the national emissions come from the built environment. And that's third only behind oil and gas and transportation. So it's a significant driver of the greenhouse gas emissions nationally. And so the global real estate market has been, especially in Europe, who are light years ahead of us as far as legislation goes, have been moving towards green building standards. You know, and with increased climate risk comes increased investment risk. So overall, at WPM, we believe that the future of sustainable asset value, and by that sustainable is value as a proposition overall, is in green buildings. And so green buildings in 5, 10, 15 years will be a more valuable asset than brown ones. So that's just the general makeup. There are obviously national policies in place, things like the carbon tax. There are municipal policies in place and bylaws such as the greenhouse gas emissions and building performance bylaw in the city of Vancouver that are starting to drive this. But I mean, overall, that's sort of the state of play.
Oh, I'm glad you touched on it there when you were going through there. You talked about how this will impact like the investment side of the business, because obviously there's a lot more regulations coming out with regards to this. So if without City of Vancouver is probably a great example. You mean when the cities are trying to go more green and be better for the environment, we find on the brokerage side of it, it is a question that comes up a lot more, not only on the investment side, but also on the tenant side, because it feels like tenants also care about what their, you know, the buildings are in there now. When you talk about it from the investment model, what are some, you know, I mean, if I'm buying a building now, let's say it's in Vancouver or Victoria, which feel like are kind of leaders in the province of trying to make the communities more green, what type of things would I as a building owner potentially have to look at down the road to make my building more green? What options do I have to kind of participate in the program, to participate to make it a better program?
Well, you've got to look, first of all, as to whether the asset is compliant with the existing regulations to begin with. You know, many investors are doing energy audits as part of their due diligence, where they go through and assess the mechanical systems. And when I'm talking about mechanical systems as regards greenhouse gas emissions, I'm talking about water and space heating, which is where 95% of the emissions come from. You use natural gas to heat the water and the space in the building. So if you've got this massive 20-year-old natural gas boiler in the basement of an asset that you're looking to purchase, you're going to have to replace that. And at what cost? And how does that affect the bottom line? So from an investor perspective, it's things like that, from a capital perspective, but also as far as a regulation perspective. In 2020, based on 2026 emissions, the City of Vancouver will start issuing, they're effectively fines, but they're calling them carbon emission permit fees in 2027, and that's $350 a ton over a specific target. So you're looking at an additional operating cost. You know, we're looking in the tens of thousands of dollars a year.
Wow.
But come 2040, that GHG emissions target drops to zero. And even for buildings that are performing very well right now, the projected penalty, if they do nothing, is hundreds of thousands of dollars a year.
Wow.
So it's extremely significant. Now, there has to be the political will in 2040 to actually charge those fees, which remain. But those are the type of regulations and capital investment research that that investors have to do when purchasing a property. And it's why green buildings have a greater value now than brown ones. I say brown ones, those are the ones that haven't undertaken any kind of retrofit capital project.
Now, within your portfolio, which obviously is just enormous, how many square feet you guys have under management right now, obviously I'm assuming you're working with landlords and educating them on this stuff like that. What are you kind of seeing from the landlord side of it? Are landlords kind of like really willing to kind of be part of this and try to better the situation? Or are you experiencing maybe some pushback just based on capital cost requirements to this? How are you guys finding it when working with clients of a scale at the size that you guys are?
Right. Well, I mean, one of the important aspects that I neglected to mention early on is that Warrington PCI, we are a third-party management company. So we don't actually own any of the assets that we manage. So as a result, we have a wide diversity of ownership types from multinational corporations and pension funds to the legacy family-owned portfolios in Vancouver with one or two buildings. So the level of education and sophistication varies. Typically, the larger the client, the more apt they are to have corporate ESG strategies of their own, and they are pulling us along and demanding data and performance metrics from us, whereas we are on the educating end for others, and some have no interest in anything regarding sustainability at all. And I mean, that's very much a generalization. There are all kinds of other factors that play into that. For instance, if an investor has a short hold period it makes no sense to expend vast amounts of capital on a property that you're planning on selling in a year or two or redeveloping. So wide variety of different issues, but that's kind of the client base. So it's across the board.
Now, are you finding some communities and cities are more on board with the program than other cities? Obviously, like I said at the earlier, Victoria and Vancouver, just from an outsider's perspective, seems like they're definitely pushing to go in a greener direction. Is there other cities and communities that throughout the province you find are more on board trying to get to this 2030, 2040 targets?
Short answer is no. Vancouver and Victoria are absolutely the leaders in the province, and Vancouver is a leader in North America. You know, Vancouver is up there with Seattle, Portland, New York City, as far as advancing their carbon reduction bylaws and policy. Montreal and Toronto are also Canadian leaders. Yeah, so Vancouver is very much on the cutting edge of these types of policies and bylaws.
What are you seeing so much on the tenant side? Because I can just speak from the brokerage industry, obviously, that we're in, is it does come up from time to time. And it feels like when it comes up, it's more office tenants that are asking more than maybe retail or industrial tenants. What are you guys seeing on the tenant side of things with regards to like how important is this to tenants, maybe in the city of Vancouver, as an example? And it, you know, can a landlord, I guess this is maybe a bad way to say it, can a landlord charge more for a building that is, you know, LEED certified type of thing where people are kind of like, hey, I want to be in that building. I feel good about being in that building because we're doing something good for the environment, not just renting office space.
That is the million-dollar question, Corey. my short answer to that is, if there was a direct correlation between decarbonization and increased lease rates, we would not be able to keep up with the deep energy retrofits. It would be off the charts. But there isn't. There is, JLL put out a document last year called the Green Tipping Point, where they were talking about the demand for green leasing space and the gap that exists in the country between existing green leasable space and brown leasable space.
Yeah.
And now, to me, demand without the willingness to pay a green premium equals a preference. So yep. I think that there is a green preference in the marketplace. So two identical leasable units, one with a decarbonization plan in place, another one without, tenants will prefer the green one. But we do not see tenants willing to pay anything approaching a significant premium for the green space. So our challenge on a property management side is to build the business case to decarbonize the building, make the building more efficient without impacting the market competitiveness of the property.
I guess the next question then, do you see a lower vacancy rate potentially in some of these buildings? Because tenants, although they're not probably paying more for it, but it's a more attractive option for tenants, assuming everything else is equal, that you're finding more tenants that want to be in these buildings versus maybe a green building versus a brown building.
Yes. If there's one metric that you can point to, it is that green buildings lease up faster. So that's a metric where there is evidence. But, you know, in my mind, and there are many barriers, decarbonizing the built environment. But I think one of the missing links, one of the key missing links is in valuations and assessments. And that's where there is difficulty because assessors are historians, not philosophers. And they have difficulty parsing out whether a building becomes a more valuable asset because you have electrified the boiler or because you put a shiny new piece of machinery in. There's no differentiation, you know, between a high efficiency gas boiler and an air source heat pump. So what are the many barriers?
I would think from a landlord perspective, especially in the office market, obviously like 10 million square feet under management, you guys have your pulse on what's going on and where in that asset class. I would think a good sales, I shouldn't say sales pitch, but a good way to help a landlord better understand, I mean, this is not only good for the environment, but also if the office market is still struggling to kind of get back to its pre-pandemic type vacancy rates and lease rates, as a landlord, that might be a pretty good investment for me to turn my building into a green building just to keep my vacancy at a better thing, at a lower rate. On top of that, I'm doing something great for the environment. Do you feel more landlords are kind of maybe looking at it from that approach as well, that this is going to help me lease up my building, although I'm not getting anything more, but now my NOI and my revenues are better?
Absolutely. But the fact remains that you're still not going to see a significant bump in your revenue.
Yeah.
So the building has to be able to afford it. You don't want to increase your CAM beyond what the market can support. And every building brings with it its own existing amortization schedule. You're still paying off the new roof that you installed 3 years ago. You've just repainted the building. You've redone the lobby to attract new tenants. You've put in a gym to capitalize on the flight to experience and the flight to quality.
Yeah.
So yes, green buildings look better, but just like anything else, what's the business case? What's the return on the investment? Can I afford to do X, Y, and Z in order to advertise my property as being a green property without greenwashing?
Do you find, like, obviously you talked based on the financial side of it a little bit, there's obviously a major cost that landlords would have to consider or incur to do this. Is there any government subsidy programs or rebates or anything like that that's kind of like incentivizing landlords to look at this and, you know, hopefully eventually going to participate in it on the financing side, to help capitalize it?
There's tons. In fact, I, contrary to many others in the industry, I think that access to capital for decarbonization capital projects is one of the least of our worries. The capital is there. BC Hydro and Fortis both have incentives, very lucrative incentives in some cases for energy saving. But still, they aren't grants, right?
Yeah.
In some cases, you can get grants for energy studies and engineering funding, but for the actual capital project, you're still borrowing. And there isn't a robust method for accessing preferred rates from lending institutions for purchasing green assets or for decarbonizing existing assets. And that's another one of the barriers in the action items that RealPAC and CAGBC have been advising for.
Well, it's funny you talked on barriers. That was almost leading to my next question. I was going to say, what barriers and what challenges may be out there for landlords and for people trying to move towards this? Is there hurdles that have to be, you know, overcome to get this program kind of in a, you know, moving in the right direction with more landlords?
There are many barriers, unfortunately. You know, from our standpoint, the single biggest challenge is the lack of a strong business case. Business as usual, especially with the difference in cost just for the fuel you're eventually using, the difference in cost between gas and electricity, business as usual with gas is always going to be significantly cheaper. So the largest barrier, as one of the pivots that we're making as a result of that is that we're, rather than focusing initially on decarbonization, we're focusing on efficiency, because efficient buildings use less energy, cost less to operate, which increases the asset value. And kind of a hidden side benefit that goes along with that is you also happen to be decarbonizing by using less energy to begin with. But then once you have introduced these efficiency methods into the property, you're able to right-size the future solution, which in 99% of the cases is a much smaller heating plant than was originally designed for the building. You know, new buildings that's handed over in the last 20 years are typically at least two times oversized, and many times they're four times oversized. So you can get by with something much smaller. I think I've, did I answer your question or did I?
You did. No, you totally did. No, you absolutely did. And maybe this is a business case, and maybe this is an exaggerated business case, but if I have an office building in downtown Vancouver, which is obviously a leader in this, the green building space, that's 40% vacant. Maybe if I spend the money, although it is probably a fairly large capital improvement I have to make, that if it can help me get to 90% occupancy over 3 years, it may be worth that from a landlord perspective versus having 40% of your vacancy, or your building to sit vacant. I don't know if that's a strong case to make or not, but you guys would know better than I would, because obviously you're on the leasing side of the thing as well. You're on the landlord side of things. You can see all the challenges these office tenants have. What do you think the future of sustainability looks like? Is this something that continues to be in the forefront and becomes more prevalent as years go on? Or is it unfortunately something that other communities that fade?
No, I absolutely believe it is the future of real estate. It's not a matter of if, but when. You know, when we're talking about barriers to decarbonization and barriers to effective sustainability and decarbonization plans in properties, these barriers are not permanent. I think what we can all categorically state is that the value of brown assets is declining and will continue to decline. So whether you are a landlord with that 40% vacancy kind of weighing your options, if you're looking to the future, the money that you are spending on greening your building is table stakes for the future leasing market. If you don't, then you are guaranteeing yourself that vacancy rate will do nothing but increase.
Yeah, it's a great point. All right, Chris, is a final question before we get to our six-pack of lighthearted questions we ask all of our guests before we let you leave. You got 10 million square feet of office space under management. Is the office market getting better? Are vacancy rates declining in 2025? It's a million, literally, that's probably a $100 million question with the size of portfolio
just
you got.
Let me dust off my crystal ball. if anything, the vacancy rates are decreasing incrementally.
Yep.
I think the general consensus is one of uncertainty.
Yeah, that's a good way to look at it.
And I think that's all I'll say on that.
Awesome, Chris. Well, we thank you very much once again for joining us today. But before we let all of our guests go, we have a six-pack of lighthearted questions to ask you. So we get to know you a little bit better outside of the office there. Do you have just a couple more minutes for us?
Sure do.
All right, Melissa, lead us off.
All right. What's one book you'd recommend our listeners read?
Well, the one I just finished is called Creation Lake. And it was shortlisted for the Booker, I think, for the 2024 Booker. It's about a freelance spy who is infiltrating this environmental activist group in France.
Wow. Wow, that sounds like a way over my head. Next one up, Chris. Unfortunately, you found yourself on death row. You've done something horribly wrong, but they're going to give you one last meal before it's all said and done. What meal are you having?
It'll be a steak and the most expensive bottle of wine I can find.
Anywhere you're getting that steak from, do you have a preference of a restaurant, or is it a barbecue? Where's that steak coming from?
Well, I'm a fan of Hawksworth, so... I'll go with Hawksworth.
Great choice. Great choice.
All right. Next question. Favorite vacation spot?
Changed a little given the current climate. Big fans of Palm Springs, and have spent many enjoyable golfing trips and sightseeing trips down there. But closer to home, the Okanagan, specifically Naramata and Wine Country.
Good one. Looking back on your career, what's one piece of advice you would give your younger self?
I don't know. I frankly wouldn't change anything that I've done. So I guess just trust the process, trust your instincts, and let the chips fall where they may, because everything's going to work out in the end.
Great. That's good. That's really good. Yeah.
All right. You are drunk at a bar and you're handed a karaoke mic. What song are you singing?
As someone who will never do anything remotely karaoke, I've actually thought about this many times and I can't think of anything. It would probably be something that I know all the lyrics to. So probably something by the Stones or the Beatles.
Ah, both good ones. Both good ones. And we're obviously in the city of Vancouver. We're going to make the assumption that you're a Canuck fan. Are the Canucks making the playoffs this year?
Well, the assumption is incorrect, Corey.
Oh!
I am a lifelong Leafs fan.
Oh! So,
living in Vancouver has significant challenges from that side. But you guys, for some reason, the Canucks are the Leafs' kryptonite. And I've been to every game that the Leafs have played here in the last 19 years, and the Canucks have won 17 of them. So there.
But this year, like, you got to look. I'm going to give you guys the benefit of the doubt back east there. You've got a good core, so yeah, I'll reframe that question. In the event the Leafs don't go deep into the playoffs or break the curse, do you break up the core? And the core is in like Matthews and Marner and Tavares and the core. Do you break them up?
No.
No. Okay.
No, that would be foolhardy.
Okay.
And in answer to your first question, even though I'm not necessarily a Canucks fan, I certainly follow the team. And I think they will be hard-pressed to make the playoffs this year, unfortunately.
It's been a tough go. Now, do you think there's anything that we could do as the Canucks organization that we could antagonize you to take Pettersson and his contract from us?
Nope.
Nope. Okay. No, well, it's fair.
I like to think that Leafs brass is a little smarter than that. They see through that smoke screen.
Well, I will say one thing with the Leafs is it seems like the goaltending situation seems to be getting better and better, not just for now, but also for the future with the young goaltender they have. And I think if that's, you know, if there's one person in hockey that can either win you a game or even a series, it's the one player that's on the ice for 60 minutes, and that can be your goaltender. So if that kind of gets in line, who knows? Time with that curse could break sooner than later.
Well, if Binnington didn't prove that last night,
I know, amazing.
No one ever will.
I was, you know, I mean, obviously that was a big question mark going into the whole Four Nations Cup thing here, and we're kind of going off, we're going down a rabbit hole here, but we've got some time. I was glad to see he made those amazing saves, both in the third period and overtime. And when you're in best-on-best hockey, it's not me or you shooting on him. These are the world's best. And some of those saves were outstanding for him to be able to shut the door he did that obviously led to the Canadian victory. I felt it was great for him to see that. I think one people maybe forget, like, he won a Stanley Cup. So clearly you can play under pressure. And he definitely came to the occasion and then some.
That was a long time ago. And I'm eating crow today. And more than happy to, because I was not happy with Cooper's decision to stick with him. But that's why he's behind the bench, and I'm a property manager.
On that note, Chris, how can all of our listeners find out more about what you guys are doing over at Warrington PCI there and property management, all that fun stuff that you guys are working on?
Feel free to check out the webpage, warringtonpci.com, check on the sustainability link, and give me a call.
Amazing. Chris, thank you so much for your time. Like I said, we got a chance to finally cover a topic we've had on our list for a while. Thank you once again, and we appreciate it, and we look forward to having you back in the future. Hopefully, we can talk about the office market with you next time and how that's doing.
Awesome, Corey. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Chris. Take care. There you have it, folks. Our interview today with Chris Kassianchuk, Warrington PCI Management, on sustainability and a little bit on the office market there. We squeezed that in right at the very end.
Just
there.
A little teaser. Well,
10 million square feet under management.
Yeah, I saw your face when he said that. You were like, whoa.
That's a lot.
This is an achievement.
The amount of data that he has at his fingertips for that asset class with that much under management in this province is invaluable.
So it's a whole other show.
As we said, we're going to invite him back. We're going to invite him back to come on and talk about the office market. Hopefully he can find some time for us.
He hasn't even aired yet, and he's a past guest fan favorite already.
Past guest fan favorite. This hasn't even got edited yet. That's how good that episode was there. But amazing to find out how sustainability plays a role in commercial real estate, how green buildings can be more attractive and more valuable than brown buildings, and just how tenants care. Although there's not, you know, he touched on there that there's not really a lot more value you can charge for spaces, but the vacancy rates, especially in maybe an office market, which is definitely challenged right now, could be lower because tenants actually care about this stuff nowadays. So it's great to hear and something we wanted to cover for a long time. So we really appreciate Chris joining us for that.
Yeah. I am also very interested to learn about green versus brown, the labeling of them. I didn't know that we called it a brown building.
Yeah. You know, we're in a green city.
I've heard the green building.
Yeah.
But the brown building is a new phenomenon.
If you're green, if your building's not green, it's brown.
It's brown.
That's how we're going to categorize it here. So. Yeah. Melissa, for anyone that wants to sell condos and stuff like that, obviously in this market that feels like it's trending in the right way, interest rates are kind of going.
Mm-hmm.
How can someone get a hold of you?
Yeah, you can call me 778-869-4477 or email me melissa@vancouverrealestatepodcast.com.
And for all of those looking to do commercial real estate transactions, you're welcome to reach out to us at William Wright Commercial anytime. You can visit our website, williamwright.ca. You can send me an email, corey@williamwright.ca. Always happy to hear from our listeners on good points and bad points about the program. And you can also call our Vancouver office, 604-428-5255. Let us know what you're looking for. And we'll put you in touch with any of the agents throughout the province. And we'll be back next week with another amazing show.
All right.
All right. Fingers crossed this one works. We're crossing our fingers. So if the listeners don't hear this program, we know we have a recording issue. So hopefully this one works.
All right.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
Subscribe today.